You have, I love pairing a beverage with food. So for example, of course, it's very famous for wine. We were just offline talking about Spain before. There's a white wine that I love very much from an area called Galicia, which is in the northwest of Spain. A white wine that is absolutely amazing with seafood, especially cold seafood. And it's unfortunately not very famous in Asia, but it's really a wonderful pairing with cold seafood. And I try to do that in our wine list, which we are working on currently and developing. We're trying to have the wine that the guests know, you know, the grapes that people know, such as Cabernet Sauvignon and Merlot and Pinot Noir, but also introducing maybe grapes that guests do not know, like the one I just mentioned, Albariño. We have a lot of very good meat here, coming sometimes from Korea, from Australia, from Japan, and I think it's very interesting also to have some wines from the Middle East, where there are a lot of grills. So for example, there's a few wines that I really like from Lebanon. So introducing a new wine does not mean just showing the bottle and pouring the wine, but there might be some storytelling behind it. Why we would recommend that wine with a special dish that the guest has ordered. And we do the same as well with a cocktail. For example, we have a cocktail that is served with some bacon. And it's just adding the experience. The cocktail on its own is beautiful.
Yes.
But and you talk from an experience. Yes. But you know, we wanted to bring the experience to a different level with something different, whether it's the glassware, whether it is the bacon. You know, it's a little bit for us. For me, I like, for example, I love children. I have a daughter, but there's nothing more moving than to surprise your kid or a kid with something that is totally unexpected from him or from her, and that stays with you, right? To make somebody smile, open his or eyes up, and have that kind of feel. This is also one of the reasons I love this job. And sometimes I spend a little bit too much time in my office and not enough engaging with guests. I wish I had the opportunity to do that more often, because it's really, I think, everyone who wants to be in this industry is passionate about other people and is passionate about creating new experiences for his or her guests. And I think when it works, it's very rewarding, and I'm not talking financially. It's, you know, I feel personally, and probably it's because of my experience with my father, who passed away at a very young age. I think sometimes we try to make things very complicated, where happiness, and I'm not necessarily, I haven't discovered that by myself, and it's, I'm 56, but I'm still learning. But happiness sometimes is about making other people happy. You know, I have a cat. Every time I make my cat happy, it makes me happy. You
know, what's your cat's name?
Muli. She's Korean. We bought her in Korea. But it's very true. You know, I don't think people who are hurting other people or animals, in their core, they find happiness. I think we find happiness in making other people happy. Sometimes it's not easy to do that. And sometimes it's very, very easy. It's just, you have to have the generosity of heart, and you have to be humble and walk your way through. But like everybody, sometimes I do it, sometimes I don't. But definitely I'm always happier when I do it than when I don't.
Have you ever worked with any sommeliers?
Sommeliers?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, again. let me tell you something. There's a very famous Michelin star restaurant in Paris. It's called La Tour d'Argent. And this restaurant has an amazing reputation, had, you know, prestigious guests. It's very, very famous for their wine cellar. which takes a bit of about a block in Paris. That's one of, to my knowledge, one of the largest ones. And the beautiful thing about Bali, we go back to Indonesia, is that you have an amazing community living in Bali. People coming from all different kinds of backgrounds. And there's a gentleman, actually, they're brothers. Their name is Vaneke. And he was, Christian, was the youngest chef sommelier of La Tour d'Argent in the, I might be wrong, but I think late 70s, early 80s. Yeah. And he used to have, when I met him, he had a guide. He had developed a kind of pocketbook on Bali. And later in his career, he opened some, especially one wonderful restaurant in Bali, where he used some techniques that he learned at the time at the Tour d'Argent. And so we were at Coup d'État one day. It was really at the beginning. And I said, Christian, teach me about wine. So obviously I learned about wine, but you know, that was someone, anyone who would know much about wine would know about Christian Vaneke, he's a legend. And I said, you know, this is, I take care of the lunch and you explain to me, something about wine. And that's what he did. And we became friends for many, many years. And unfortunately, he passed away not long time ago. His brother was also, he was not chef sommelier, but he was a sommelier, at La Tour d'Argent as well. And he still lives in Bali. Two wonderful gentlemen. Unfortunately, one left too soon. So yes, I did work with him. One of his famous guests was the painter Salvador Dali. And, when I was working in Singapore, we had a Spanish restaurant and I called him and of course he came straight away. And I said, let's do something about Salvador Dali, because he had a lot of stories. I will tell you one that he told me, because it's quite funny. So what happened is that we had, of course, journalists coming, writing about him, writing about Salvador Dali. We tried to have some wines that Salvador Dali enjoyed very much, do some pairing and things like that. So that was the last time I worked with him on a project like this. So about Dali, one famous and hilarious story. He would just do a scene and close his eyes and choose a wine, or ask one of his guests to choose the wine. But actually the wine would always be the same. The team knew exactly. Unfortunately, the gentleman who served him that time didn't know about the trick. And I think he chose one of the most expensive wine out of the thing. And he came with the wine. And the following day, Christian came and he said, Christian, next time you're sick or next time you go on leave, please make sure all your team knows our little story about choosing the wine with the blind, with the closed eyes. So it cost him a fortune. But that, you know, this is what is amazing with these people, is all these stories and people you have encountered in your life. Amazing. Yeah. So yeah, I love the passion of the sommeliers. It's a very difficult job. You need to be passionate about wine. And you know, we talked about pairing before, and it's a very different level, right? But because I'm far from being a sommelier, and we don't have any sommeliers here, but you know, to understand the weight of it's not only about the taste, but it's also about the density of the wine, right? Some white wine are extremely light. You know, you cannot pair that with something that is very heavy as a food, like a cream sauce or something like that. And you have some wine, on the other hand, white wine that have a lot of body. They are heavy wine, and you can't, for example, have them with a very light cold seafood, for example. So you have to respect the wine for their characteristics and think far beyond just the taste, the sweetness, the dryness of the wine. So it's really recognizing the wine and understanding the wine, understanding where it comes from, you know, and be able to. What Christian used to tell me is that don't look is like the people. Don't really wear, don't really look at what they wear or what the bottle looks like. Is the worst you can do for a wine. What you want to do for the wine is appreciate the wine for what it is and respect it. So, for example, I know one thing he really didn't like is that if you had to taste two wines, it's really like for the people, right? If you have a wine that has, you know, it's going to be the amazing thing, and you have a wine that is less, you know, solid than the second one, the one before, you should have the more humble one first and then the second one, and not the other way around, right? Because, you know, it's like if you drive a Ferrari and then after you go on a motorbike, I mean, like a small motorbike, you're not going to have the same experience, obviously. And you, maybe your motorbike is the best motorbike you can have, but of course it can't compete with a Ferrari because they are two different things, right? So I think, you know, sometimes again, things are very simple, but we have a tendency to complicate things. And we don't make a favor to ourselves and not a favor also to the things that we engage with, like the wine, for example, here.
And with, and speaking of that, your some of the mixologists you guys have on hand are amazing.
Thank
I
you.
Want to give you kudos to that. And I love your bottle selection. I noticed that you guys have McAlwin, which is one of my favorites. We actually did a party or event with them in New York where we covered Secret Hideaway, Harmony Hideaway, something like that, in Rockefeller Center. During Christmas, it was the most amazing dinner, and they had jazz music playing live. So I noticed in the Wynn's Hotel, the Wynn's Sky Bar, rather, you guys have a little platform or a step-up stage where you have live music. But how did you come up with these bottles? Because I saw Chivas as well.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, I've been speaking a lot, right? but the thing that, again, about humility... you can't, that's the beauty about this job, is you always discover new things, right? And you learn new things. But, you're not the only teacher in the house, even if you're a general manager. So, as you said, I have amazing, bartenders here, mixologists. They're passionate. And, you know, as I said, we are working on new cocktails, new presentations, find exciting spirits and things like that, liquors. And really when we work on that, you can see, it's palpable. You can really feel it. It's not only visual.
It's aromatic, it's aromatic rather. It's, you can see it, smell it, taste it.
Right.
Berry forever.
But what I love, berry. Again, because I'm a people lover, is, I love the... You know, it's like my wife and my daughter, of course, but my wife and my daughter do not drink alcohol. So I never drink alone, right? And obviously for some, you know, drinking wine in particular sometimes has, you know, religious connections. And it's something that it's communal, right? You want to share. And I think... For me, it's again, it's where it is. I really love engaging with people. And for me, yes, I love a good wine and I love a good drink. But I cannot do that if I drink it alone and, or prepare it alone. So my passion really is to see, like what you said about the drinks before, for me, it goes beyond that. I love to see somebody who is passionate and create and say, oh, Philip, I think I think I know way how we can make that drink better. And he goes and he's, or she goes and all excited. That is where I have my motivation. Yes, and on top of that, if the drink is good and it's really mind-blowing, it's even better. But the first part where you see the excitement, the passion, and you can see it and feel it, that is, you know, there's no comparison. And sometimes we do it pretty late at night, right? Because we have to do that when the bar is a bit more quiet or when I've done my and read my emails. But passion is stronger than time.
Right. And not to mention the Sky Bar is on the 45th floor or 44th floor.
Yeah.
So that's an amazing setting to be in as well.
Thank you very much for that. Yeah. I mean, again, it's about an experience. Right. You can drink the same wine, smoke the same cigar, And depending on how you feel and what is around you, it's a bit of a different feeling. So it's about experience, yeah. Again, it doesn't have to be complicated. So, yeah, we try to... it's a big cliche, but nowadays we have more and more, you know, we have our membership program, right? Marriott Bonvoy, and you have ambassadors, you have titanium or platinum members who travel a lot. I've been there, and we want to create these experiences, and especially some guests, like in our hotel, our long-stay guests, they stay not 2 or 3 days, but they stay maybe 10 days. We had a guest who stayed 3 months here. And I think it's really, really important from a human side, but also from the experiences we can create at the hotel the home away from home, right? To make it, like I love, for example, an area that is sometimes overlooked at is the, what we call the sky lobby. That little living room that we have just next to the front office. It's when you just take a picture of that and you have the view, it really feels like a living room at home. You know, we just miss the TV or a good stereo or something. And
well, the TV is the view.
Yes, but yeah, we don't want it there because the view again, as you know, the views here are amazing because everywhere you look around, you have a different view of Phnom Penh. But the feel of the couch, the armchairs and everything, it makes you feel at home. And on top of that, if you have a good drink, then I think, or a good food with it, that's great.
And the executive chef here, he's amazing too.
Thank you.
Amazing hamburgers.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, whoa. And they were pretty affordable, right? Some of the fast food restaurants in town, their burgers are pretty pricey. And what I noticed about your menu, it's affordable. You have affordable options all the way up to ultra luxury options.
Again, we're a very humble hotel. And if, you know, at the same time, and many, many colleagues of mine will tell you the same, we have to have, we say sometimes, if you don't love yourself, how do you want somebody to love you, right? Same thing. How do you expect to get people at the hotel to dine in your restaurants if the locals, by locals I mean people living in the place, like people who live in Phnom Penh, they can be Khmer, Cambodians, but they can be also, you know, expatriates, for example. How do you expect to attract the people who stay in the hotel to dine in your hotel if you are not even able to be attractive to those people who live in Phnom Penh? And if you have that kind of philosophy, then obviously you're competing with also the freestanding restaurant outside. I think it's a mistake to believe that your competition has to be in a hotel. You have to adjust your prices. And again, it's also consistent with the positioning of Fairfield Hotels because we are part of the select tier. So, you know, you can't be a select hotel and charging, seven, eight-star hotel prices.
So most of your team members, from food and beverage director to the executive chef, are those team members, were they selected by you?
No. The whole team, I mean, there's a few people that I was lucky enough to be involved in the recruitment process with. But, the gentleman you just met, who is a Khmer American, he was recruited by my predecessor. The same for the executive chef. But we have another chef who is very, very talented. Is the gentleman who is behind the menu at the Winds. I was involved. He started pretty much at the same time as me, so we started on the job together, and then we worked pretty much on everything we do on menus together.
Yeah. You can feel the passion. The menu is great.
It's a
combination of Pan and Asian, and then I guess UK vibes and a little bit of Italian vibes. So it's a little it's a melting pot, so to speak, right?
Well, what we did with especially the Winds, we have different fields there. We try to understand how customers experience the venue. And we have different, once again, we have different segments, in a sense. You know, you might have people coming just for beer, because at the end of the day, can you cut? At the end of the day, we have people, we are a bar, and then guests might come just for having a good beer, and they just need something like a nibble, right? Something to have the beer with. So there we have some Khmer food, and we have come up with some other Asian dishes, like some Indonesian dishes. We have some Vietnamese dishes. So we try to find something that is pretty cool to have with a good beer, or maybe a glass of wine or a cocktail. Then we have people want to come in Asia. People want to share. They don't want to have their own dish and be alone, kind of thing. So we also have a family sharing section. That is, there are dishes that have been designed and created for that purpose. So you have your, we are very proud of our carbonara, for example. I have some Italian roots myself. So I'm very particular about Italian food. Again, very simple. So I use this dish as a very good symbol of simplicity, because again, simplicity is very core to what Fairfield stands for. The carbonara has a very particular recipe. It's very simple, but very often not used. So for example, when you talk about carbonara, people think of a cream sauce. Actually, carbonara is not a cream sauce pasta. It's used with eggs. The cheese that you use is not Parmigiano, or Parmesan cheese, it's pecorino. And the bacon that is used traditionally comes from what we call the jaw of the pig, which we call in Italian guanciale. All these little things put together make an amazing dish, but you have to respect the recipe. Black pepper is also actually quite important because it enhances the flavor of the dish. And again, we chose that dish because one, it represents simplicity. And secondly, that sometimes behind simplicity, there's a bit of complex, you know, you have to do some research. There's some experience. There are some skills behind, because you don't want your pasta to turn into an omelet. But at the same time, it's a beautiful dish to share, right? In the old days in Italy, especially in the countryside, you would have that bowl of pasta and then it would be shared among the different family members. So we have that. But at the same time, Chef Potia, the gentleman we were just referring to before, he also has a wonderful, wonderful Khmer fried rice recipe with beef. It's just unbelievable. My wife is Indonesian, so you have the traditional nasi goreng, right? The fried rice.
Nasi goreng.
But that dish, that one did, that Khmer fried rice, is unbelievable, really. A dish to try. So, family sharing, some dishes that are more for the bar. We also have a beautiful set menu that is more a fine dining experience, because we have a private room. Where we have regulars who come for those set menus, and we try to be also very seasonal oriented. Like we just finished the white asparagus promotion, so we do dishes with like we have a wonderful black cod. We have some Korean beef that we were able to put our hand on. We have. This white asparagus, we have caviar from time to time. We have sometimes foie gras. So we work different set menus that are more and presented very fine dining way. So we have different experiences, again, depending on what you want to do.
And then what makes the hotel also a really great destination hotel for me is the beautiful swimming pool on 28th floor, the infinity pool. Did you want to speak about that?
Yeah.
The gym. The gym is a small gym, but it's actually a functional small gym. You have state-of-the-art equipment like treadmills, so cardiovascular equipment. Great. I believe you had a great. You have foam rollers. There were also leg press machine that was actually a calibrated leg press machine, so yep. I wouldn't hurt my legs when I'm trying to rebuild my legs from an accident that I've been part of recently, unfortunately. You had mats. Most people have mats, but you had a crossbody. There was you had some great place. You also have water, but the other thing that I like about the gym facility is that it's 24-hour. And I feel like as a traveler, that's an avid traveler, people need to stretch and be able to be around other people, just be motivated with the type of equipment you guys have available. Yeah. And I thought that was great. In addition to when I turned and looked to the right, I said, whoa, there was a check-in lounge.
Yeah.
And it had a coffee maker that they had a little robot that made all the coffees you ever wanted. So I just thought that was amazing. It was all complimentary. And then I also love the decor of the entire hotel. I think you guys, the designer, the architect, they took a lot of time and planning into the actual hotel.
Oh, for sure.
You can totally see it with the ceiling to the wallpaper selection, the different textures of the door, that a waffle type door texture. And then in this, the ballroom, the conference room, the ceiling, the check-in lounge or a business center, aka business center, the chairs, by the way, those are really cool. I love the stripes on the wall, on the ceiling rather.
Yeah.
Everything from the power cord covers, the lamp selection, the candelier LED light bulbs that are dimmable. I was just like, wow. The collar sink, a Kohler sink, the Samsung screen mirroring television, which I think is every person like myself that travels that does media, we don't want to carry a lot of cameras. Like my phone, for instance, is, I think it's 4K, 8K on this phone, Samsung flagship phone. Then I also have a tablet, which is the Ultra tablet. But what I liked about it so great is that I do have a JBL speaker that I come with because I love sound. But I love the fact that your rooms are so smart, right? Your rooms, you had an alarm clock with a Bluetooth JVD, I believe. So not only can I screen mirror, I had a 10-foot long couch in the room, which I think if I wanted to have guests at sliding door panels or sliding panels rather that section off the room. So if I want to make my room feel bigger or larger, more intimate, more open, I can have like a little mixer in my room with other friends or even a meet and greet, right? Mm. So I feel like the way that they designed the facility was just immaculate. And I've stayed a lot of hotels before that are five-star, five-diamond hotels, whatever, from AAA. But it's been very rare that I come across a hotel that's a destination hotel that's this big, right? I mean, the bathrooms on the 27th floor were like, what? Mm-hmm. So it's like, and I know the hotel is also a year old, but at the same time, it's a beautiful hotel. Even the pillows looking across from you, like you can tell somebody actually took some time in designing or just picking out the decor of those. And how everything is just not so muted all the time. It's, you have textures and colors, and there's tons of pops of colors. And it's very, they also use their harmonious, I guess a harmonious color palette. So a lot of grays, beiges, browns, and little pops of color. They remind me of Asia. They remind me of Cambodia. Did you work with the designer of the hotel as well?
No, again, because the...
Oh, you already did.
Everything was done before I came. But, okay, one, well, you speak amazingly about the hotel. Thank you very much about that. You asked me before... a question, actually a very interesting question. I didn't answer properly. I did answer, but there's something I forgot, which is important. I mentioned that my background for Marriott was with JW Hotels. I worked in Hong Kong for the JW Hotel, and I worked as well in Korea for the JW that we have in Banpo area. JW is the son of the founder of Marriott, created that brand for his father. So it's a brand that is very dear to the Marriott family. And I would say dear to anyone working for Marriott, because we understand the importance of the brand for the family. And when you dedicate a brand to somebody, you try to, I'm a small potato, right? And I'm a very humble person, but from what I heard and you know, the people I met, I was fortunate enough to work with people who have worked with Mr. Marriott directly. The brand really reflects aspects of the personality. And Fairfield was an easy choice for me because this is a second brand that is very important for the Marriott family. Have you ever heard what Fairfield means or what it is? Or
I researched it, but I wanted you to break it down because I know people in America, Fairfield, it's not what I'm experiencing. It's not what I'm used to in America, right?
Yeah.
It's compared to a Courtyard. Sometimes people mix them up. Your buffet is completely different at this particular Fairfield than I've experienced at other Fairfields.
I see.
Yeah.
But what I'm referring to is actually not a hotel.
Okay.
It's so if you happen to see at our hotels, not only Fairfield, we usually have an introduction video if you go on TV. For this hotel, for example, you have a brief introduction from Debbie Harrison, who is the daughter of Mr. Marriott. And she explains the brand better than anybody else, of course. And she, you see very old pictures of her father in their house, or if you wish, their farm. That was called Fairfield.
Okay.
So it's very important for the Marriott family because they have a lot of memories, herself, but also their children, so the grandchildren of the founder. At the time, then they would spend their time, family time, the whole family at Fairfield.
Okay.
So and when you see those pictures of Mr. Marriott with family members, with the people living in that area, but also there's a great shot of Mr. Marriott with President Reagan. So you had dignitaries staying there, you had more humble profiles staying there, and you could see Mr. Marriott being himself and welcoming his guests, whoever they were, the same way, and be very humble. And also in JW, the gardens are very important. Their place, Fairfield, you see Mr. Marriott riding horses, the outdoor are elements that are very important that were important for him.
And wasn't this near the Blue Ridge Mountains in Virginia, I believe?
Exactly.
Yes. I did a press trip there at a destination there. It was amazing. You look out to the mountains and you literally see Blue Ridge. Like, literally. I was like, what are you calling this?
Yeah. Actually, if you see some of our collaterals, they have that blue color. And then it's a color that carries, if you see that some of our carpets are actually of that blue color.
Yes, in the reading room area.
Correct.
I noticed that.
Yeah. So why I'm bringing this up is I think both at JW and at Fairfield, yeah, we might have some differences with some of the property in the U.S. in terms of the scope of the services we offer. But one thing that remains true across the brand is the legacy of Mr. Marriott. You know, when you have a guest, whether you're in a select hotel or a luxury hotel, the warmth, family is a very important aspect of Mr. Marriott, right? He was a family man. These elements of hospitality, simplicity, I never met Mr. Marriott, unfortunately, but very simple man, the type of person I think that make you feel listened to and important, whoever you are. I feel that this is a great lesson of what hospitality is about. And also, if you think about Mr. Marriott, you know, his background also of quite humble. They started with a very small business to start with in Washington. So to grow the company to the level we have today, you have a lot of reasons to not be humble anymore, but still, I think humility is something that is very dear to any Marriott associates, but definitely to the Marriott family as a whole. So again, great legacy. We have inherited through the legacy a lot of core values that are especially focusing on the people, how we treat our people. There are a lot of quotes that we have from Mr. Marriott that refer to this. Typically, Mr. Marriott, when himself or his son, when they visit the hotels, or his grandson, when they visit the hotels, they would go down to the back of the house, go where the staff canteen is, engage with associate we have in the back of the house. You know, a great lesson of leadership. And it was very true as well during COVID. You know, they were very, very close to our associates during that period, and our CEO as well at the time. So again, I think the personality, you have different scope of services, but the core at the end of the day is the human who engage with the guests. And again, leaving Mr. Marriott's legacy, I think the warmth and the hospitality we provide are elements that are very core to our success, and especially for the success of these two brands.
Is there anything that we didn't already speak to that you like us to touch on? I know that you guys in the past, with the owners of the hotel, the Chipmong Group, rather, mm-hmm. they're planning to do a mall here from floors 1 through 5. And one of my favorite designers, I'm sure a lot of people's favorite designers, who has about 200 doors worldwide, is Karl Lagerfeld. And so I thought that was so awesome when I saw that you guys were going to be, I guess, be home to one of those doors.
Yes, correct. Yeah. Listen, the hotel is has a lot of what we call USPs, right? Or a lot of aspects to it that are very interesting. We were talking about the fact that we have daylight across the hotel wherever you are, whether it's in the ballroom or in a restaurant. The other aspect is, yes, we have a bank in the building. We have offices in the building. And there's a mall to be developed here as well. So we're very fortunate. The ownership is obviously something that is very important for us. We work very closely with our owners. They live in Phnom Penh most of the time.